The Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
Welcome to the show that helps you lead according to God's purposes. I'm Andy Peck, your host, delighted that you've given up your precious time to listen today. You will be familiar with psychological instruments that can help you understand yourself and your team. We've looked at the Myers-Briggs temperament indicator on the show in the past, and these can be valuable tools in helping you hire staff and managing teams. And this week, we're going to be looking at a tool which has been utilized for many years within the business sector and is slowly gaining traction in the church and charity world. It is called the Glovinkowski Predisposition Indicator, thankfully shortened to GPI. And it looks at how you typically lead within the context of your organizational structure, vision, and values. And I'm delighted to be joined this week by three guests to consider it. Henry Ratter, a former senior manager at ICI, who completed a DMIN thesis based on this tool, which shows that clergy personality is a key factor in helping churches to flourish. I'm also joined by David Physick, a principal consultant at Glovinkowski International, and the venerable Dr. Barry Wilson, who is Archdeacon of Montgomery and has first-hand experience of the tool we're considering. We're going to first go to David for a brief overview of the tool before asking Henry to explain how he used the tool in his research, and then ask Barry to share how he found the tool when looking at its use for church leaders. So David, first of all, perhaps you can explain a little bit about the tool.
I first encountered the tool when I was still a senior leader at Barclays Bank, and you point towards the Myers-Briggs indicator, which a great many people will be familiar with. At the time, Dr. Steve Glovinkowski, who founded Glovinkowski International, recognized some shortcomings in that instrument. You know, what was it actually exploring? Was it exploring personality, or was it exploring delivered behaviors, which are very different? And he set about devising his own instrument that drew on something called the Big Five Trait Theory of Personality. Myers considers four of those traits. It admits the fifth, which has the very unappealing label in the psychology dictionary of neuroticism or emotionality. And Steve wanted to create an instrument that would facilitate, you know, a meaningful conversation about the data, not just a recital of scores, which achieves little, and to remove the risk of certain labels like neuroticism being pejoratively interpreted, that you see a piece of data about something and you don't like the label, you're likely to dismiss it. So how can we create a language that's broadly and generally acceptable? So the GPI was developed. I was a guinea pig in that development in the late 90s, early 2000. And the instrument provides three main pieces of data: your natural or preferred approach to problem solving and implementation, your preferred approach to engaging with other people, and what you want out of those interactions. And then lastly, we use the term feelings and self-control, which I think is somewhat warmer and less harsh than neuroticism. And a questionnaire is completed securely online. The data is then generated, and the feedback takes the course of a conversation. We explain the data we're looking at. We ask for a prediction of where the data will be reported. And the data is then revealed, and that takes the conversation further forward. What we're really trying to explore is, what do you bring in of yourself? Is that going to help you behave in the optimal way for the situation that you find yourself in? Because, you know, a one-trick pony is not going to be successful in every place they find themselves. And therefore, out the back of the conversation, how can I make more use of my natural assets? Where do I need, through conscious and determined development, do I need to learn to behave effectively out of character? And perhaps, you know, that's what leadership is all about. It's about acting. It's about putting on that credible, believable, authentic performance. The best leaders have that deftness of dexterity of going into a situation, sniffing the mood of that room and behaving accordingly. And you know, we are now 20 odd years into having GPI. Many tens of thousands of people have taken the instrument. And it's always a great pleasure. It's always a great privilege to help people learn more about themselves.
Brilliant, David. You've done a splendid job of succinctly describing that. So thank you so much.
Pleasure.
That's enormous. And you're right, the word neuroticism, when I first came, I think it was Leslie Francis. I don't know if my colleagues heard of Leslie Francis. He's a big fan of these kind of tools, and some of will have read his work, Dr. Leslie Francis, of course, and he used the word neuroticism, and I wonder what on earth he was talking about at one point when looking at his work, and I think you're right to say that, you know, it's actually, you know, toning it down was I think a very good move from those who put together the GPI. So thank you, David, so much. So we're going to move to Henry now. So Henry, you became aware of this, and you completed a DMIN thesis based on the tool, which shows that clergy personality is a key factor helping churches to flourish. So tell us a little bit of the fruit of your work on this and why you think it's so valuable for church leaders.
So in my role as team leader in the Chester Diocese's program, Foundations for Ministry, I heard some stories which worried me of leaders who were autocratic and who tended to limit the contributions of those around them. So I wanted to explore the relationship between leadership and church growth. And you've already mentioned Leslie Francis, and he was actually my supervisor on this project. Yeah. And together we put it a survey which covered a number of areas. The demographics of the clergy pool, whether the leaders had experience in other sectors before going for ordination, the GPI tool, type analysis, and looking at the risk of burnout as well. There are around 200 clergy in leadership roles in the Chester Diocese, and just over 100 of them completed the survey, which is quite a high ratio for these types of studies.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
So concentrating then on the information provided by the GPI tool and using the normal feedback presentations, which David has described, for problem solving and implementation style, 2/3 of the group presented as preferring to make changes in small incremental steps. So in terms of encouraging leaders to think outside of the box or embrace situations like fresh expressions, this will not be easy to achieve or deliver. Nearly 1/3 were predisposed to generate new ideas, but also may not always take those ideas through to completion. Only 6 of the group were likely to be interested in managing change and be effective in driving it to conclusion. So quite a worrying balance in that group in terms of problem solving. Looking at communication and interpersonal style, around 85% of the group present as introvert, which suggests that some aspects of their role will be especially challenging and draining. This significant number presents as introvert has been seen in other studies by Francis and his colleagues, and raises the questions about the selection and recruitment processes which are being applied. Would God want his leaders to represent such a narrow band of predispositions? Then, looking at feelings and self-control, 37% of the group present as disciplined and ill at ease. People with these predispositions find it hard to openly express their feelings and emotions. We were looking then to take the data and to look across at church growth. So we'd asked the leaders who had been in post for 5 years or more if we could look at their church statistics, which we did. And we found three groups, churches that were growing, those that were static, and those that were managing decline. The numbers are small, but there is enough evidence of differences which can be identified there. There were more clergy presenting as radical in the growing and static churches than those in the declining. So a greater willingness to experiment and try out new ideas. There was also some evidence that clergy in growing churches were more extroverted, and statistical analysis confirmed that picture. This rings bells with the study that was done by Vos in 2014, where he showed similar evidence about the extroverted nature of clergy who were growing churches. Having found some valuable insights, we decided to then run a couple of workshops, which we did, looking at the leadership behaviors and encouraging people to think about how they might modify that behavior to be more effective in the roles where God has placed them. The second one we ran in June 2018 with Gary Winter and Steve Glankowski. It was positioned as steps on the journey to servant leadership, recognizing that a two-day workshop was only the beginning of a learning process and was only setting in motion ideas for them to think about. We were able to bring together pairs and trios of leaders who were able to then go away and hold one another to account. So overall, from this research project, we have taken away the fact that GPI provides insights into clergy leadership behaviors, which can help them think through the challenges of the role.
That's really helpful. Thank you, Henry. So, Barry, I'm sorry to have left you so quiet for so long. You know, here we are in the interview. But Barry, you... this is Barry Wilson, for listeners, Archdeacon of Montgomery. So,
I first encountered David and Henry when I was working for a while as Vice Dean of Chester Cathedral. And the staff team that I was working on were really quite enthusiastic about engaging with David and Henry and GPI to see if we could improve the way that we worked as a team. I was worried about it. And I was particularly worried about it when David offered to do a GPI personality profile of me, because, I mean, I've always been aware that the emperor has no clothes, but I was very aware that when it came to it and I got my feedback, that it was likely to be not very pretty. The only thing that gave me some comfort was that I was told, don't worry, your feedback will only be with David. None of us at this point will know what it says. So I filled in the form, as I filled a number of personality forms in the past, and I was dreading it. I don't know whether David remembers, but I delayed meeting with you several times through one excuse or another until finally I couldn't put it off any longer. And I got the feedback, And I was amazed at how accurate it was. It came as a complete surprise at me that it nailed me as an individual. And I remember talking to David about that, but also being surprised that during the course of my ministry and working life, I'd also had to develop skills that perhaps my personality didn't naturally veer towards, but as part of just doing what you do, I'd had to learn about those as well. And so I found it really helpful for understanding myself and also setting personal targets for my own future growth. Now, so that was the point at which I left that role and took on my current role. And when I got into my current role, I started to say to some of my friends and colleagues, look, I mean, I found this really helpful to me personally. Maybe it'd help you as well to look, you know, to reflect on yourself. I said, Dave and Henry are brilliant at doing this. I wonder if they'd do us a favour. And it started off with one or two, but then a whole group of us. And I know full well that my friends and colleagues that went through this really value the insights that it gave into their lives. The problem comes, though, and this is the problem comes is when teams have to share their or decide to share their data, because you really have to then make yourself vulnerable to your friends. Now, they already know your strengths and weaknesses, but probably are too polite to point them out. But of course, when you share each other's strengths and weaknesses, and there's given an opportunity to comment on them, that that it makes you feel more difficult. But I also found that, personally, I found that experience really helpful. Maybe I've just got so old, I'm now at the latter end of my career. Maybe I've got so old now that I no longer have to pretend and that I can be honest. But actually, having led in the past some large church teams, if you can only get to the point where you're truthful with one another, you can individually grow through it and say, well, I recognise I really need to start to develop in this. Or else you do what I've done with so many other teams and say, well, I'm not very good on this. I'm trying it. But actually, we as a team complement each other. And you've got skills that I'm never going to have. And all we've got to do is recognise you've got those skills and I've got these skills. And then maybe together we'll make a better whole. So I might not be their best example in practice, but I personally found it really rewarding.
Well, thank you, Barry. And I think people would think that this was a bit of a setup if you just, you know, given a massive advert for the whole thing with no, as if it was the best thing since sliced bread. And I think the reality you bring to it is probably where many leaders are listening, are thinking, yeah. Crumbs, yeah, I think these tools are really good, but I feel it could be really vulnerable for me to see myself. But actually, perhaps I need to work through those challenges. David, what would you like to add?
I think the important thing to get across about the predisposition data is that it's not right or wrong, good or bad. It's some data arising from your completing a very strong and reliable questionnaire. The power comes from the conversation about the data. So the earlier point I made of just reciting scores, that gets you nowhere. But a conversation where this is what we're looking at, where do you think you'll be report, you know, is a really great learning exploration. And then it takes time to, you know, reflect on that. And as Barry has said, well, you know, where am I good? Where do I know I'm good at doing my job? Where are those aspects of my role that, you know, trip me up? And then, you know, the team collectively, how can they help and support one another? One of the things we do when we're working with teams in setting those goals that Barry mentioned, is ask people to identify the support that they need from other people in the team. Because again, that helps cohere the team together to have that unifying aim and objective. You know, and how do we bring our skills and capabilities together?
Thank you for that's really helpful. And I think the fears that people have can be allayed by the sense that actually a the person who's with them is a sensitive, you know, like yourself, David, or the person who talks you through is sensitive to the fact that we're looking to bring out people's strengths and work on things that they may need help with. This is not a shaming exercise. But Henry, as you found, and I think this is quite key, to track back a bit, I remember chatting to someone who was, I think, a canon, I think he was archdeacon role in a southern diocese in the UK. And he was saying what a nightmare he had because some of his clergy were clearly in the wrong kind of role in the wrong kind of church. And if he could only resolve that, they would be happier and the congregations would be happier. So he had introverted scholarly types who were supposed to be extroverts in large churches. And he was able to deploy them in smaller churches where their scholarly stuff could function better and bring in the right people for the larger churches they were struggling in. I don't know about your nodding, Barry. I don't know if that's something that you would find or have found without naming any names in your area.
But listen, I found it throughout my ministry. It's been surprising, I suppose, for me that when making appointments, except for the very senior appointments in the church, some form of personality profiling hasn't been there to match need and skill sets. We've just tended to rely on the old-fashioned application form interview and off you go. And I wonder why we've been so sceptical about using any form of tool to help in better placing people so that churches can flourish and leaders can flourish.
Yeah. Well,
I think for me, Barry, the issue is that people don't fully understand how limited some of those other tools are in terms of acting as a predictor on a successful outcome for both the individual who's applying and the organization who's seeking to take them on board. And sadly, even in the business community, there isn't as broad an acceptance and use of the best practice tools as you would wish. Sadly, interview on its own is a very poor predictor of positive outcomes. You might as well get your coin out and flip it and save yourself bringing the guy to the interview process. And it's quite scary when you say that to somebody that's what the research shows. And even assessment center processes, which are quite elaborate, still only deliver a correlation of success of 0.7 because we are dealing with unique human beings and we can't get a complete match, even though we put quite a lot of effort and time into that process.
David?
And I think one of the reasons we face those challenges Henry describes is because job descriptions aren't written very well, whether it is the chief executive, the bishop, the cashier on the tills in the supermarket. We don't define the purpose of the role. We don't set out the objectives of the role very well. It mystifies me when I look at a leader or manager role and there's sort of 8, 9, 10 key objectives. The last two are the ones that consider the genuine leadership responsibilities of people's performance and their development. Surely that should be the first one, and that's what you should be exploring through the recruitment and selection processes Henry describes. Otherwise, you really do risk garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah,
I agree with that. We spend a lot of time in ICI designing processes for tying down those job profiles And it certainly made a difference once we got clarity about what it was we were looking for.
So, guys, we're coming towards the end of our discussion, and it's been really, really valuable. And time flies, isn't it? But what would you say to leaders listening? We just got maybe for, 30 seconds each, who are maybe a bit sceptical or wondering where they should go next with this, and whether they should use the tool, find out a bit more. Barry, maybe you could speak first. Thank you.
There was no one more sceptical than me. I would suggest perhaps that you did, first of all, you tried it out for yourself. You got in contact with David or Henry before you even think about it in terms of the organisation as a whole, and just see how it goes for you, and then begin to talk about how it could work or not work in your particular organisation. That would be my advice.
Thank you. That's brilliant. 30 seconds. Henry?
Agree with that entirely. We've been trying to offer it to individuals in that way so that they can see what it says, and then encouraging them to try it with their team and aggregate the data for the team.
David, anything to add?
Well, the church faces some real challenges, doesn't it, as its congregations continue to decline, and the definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing and expecting different results. So, are some different approaches needed? And the church holds a very significant role and responsibility in many people's lives. And, how can it fulfill those responsibilities better? And I think much depends upon the quality of leadership.
That was my conversation with Henry Ratter, Barry Wilson, and David Fizik. And I would add to what they've just said that it is indeed a very valuable tool, the GPI. David took me through the questionnaire, and I certainly found it enormously insightful. I've left contact details should you wish to make a no obligation connection with David Fizik. But whether you use one of these kind of tools or actually don't fancy them at all, it's certainly important we do some self-reflection. Understanding how we come across to others rather than how we think we come across, or even how we intend to come across. Maybe the week ahead has some fresh insights for you. So my thanks to my guests this week. This is Andy Peck thanking you for your time and company. See you soon.
The Leadership Show. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.